This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
With James King on Free FM. In this, our final episode, yes, it's our final episode, we delve into men's health and self-care in the context of historical trauma. We'll cover everything from nutrition and fitness to mindfulness and spiritual well-being. Whether you're a seasoned wellness warrior or just beginning your self-care journey, there's something here for everyone. Joining me on the program this morning is our resident expert on things health, Dr. Alexander Stevens II. Welcome to you, sir.
Te nā koe and good morning.
Very good. Let's dive into it. This is our last episode.
It is. You've done a good run, James.
Yeah. How do you feel about it?
I think I'm honoured to be the last person to see this process through. And of course, acknowledging that, you know, just watching you on your journey, what has it been, 2 years?
Yeah, about two years.
So, yes, I'm honoured to be the last guest.
Well, I'm honoured to have you on as our last guest. Let's dive into it. What are the most significant mental health challenges that men face today?
So, in New Zealand, it kind of flexes between years, but there tends to be kind of consistent ones, which tends to be stress, or not being able to deal with it in effective ways, i.e. being able to talk to someone, because there's that perspective of trying to keep it in. We see that within our building industry, yeah, for example. Anxiety is certainly getting up there as well. So things like, can I support my family? We're in financially tough times, for example. Men do process things differently to women, and so anxiety is certainly part of that. And then the third one tends to be a bit of depression.
Yes.
Unfortunately. So yeah, those tend to be the kind of things that we work with, well, I certainly work with in the community.
How do men and women differ in terms of the way they deal with things?
Yeah, I try not to get too much into kind of stereotypes.
Yeah.
Yet that there are, as I say, there are differences. So, for example, men do communicate their needs differently. They might not necessarily say it in a way that perhaps their partners may express. I tend to find, and this is when I did a lot of couples counselling, that women communicate verbally.
Yeah.
Men tend to communicate more with a bit more body language, or absence of body language is a way of processing. I'll give you an example. Recently, one of my closest friends has learnt some disturbing news, and their natural response, and I've known this person for over 20 years, is to kind of withdraw, I call it, into their man cave, so withdraw to kind of process what's happened, try to make sense of this thing, and then come out. Now, sometimes partners, not for this particular person, but sometimes I've seen partners trying to enter that cave and to try to pull their man out, to try to get them to unpack. But actually, like the bears in the wild, you know, hibernation or a process of space and time really is needed, because with a lot of men that I work with who might find it difficult to express verbal emotions or indeed be able to have the vocab to do it,
yeah,
they actually just want to sit and reflect and actually contemplate how does this impact on them, the other person, and the environment around them.
Yeah, then I think it's worth noting too that men do exhibit the physical manifestations of whatever it might be, anger, sadness, whatever.
Yes.
And that's because they don't have the vocabulary, the emotional vocabulary, yes, to be able to express themselves.
One of the things that I know, having worked with thousands of men over 20 plus years, especially those that have been affected by trauma, is that often when they've gone to speak out, so I've been, as you know, my background's in sexual violence and family violence abuse, so they've often tried to speak out growing up in children, so they're a key life development stages where it tends to be between the ages of 5 and 7, and if they're not believed or they're told to be quiet, that we don't talk about it, then they'll aim for their late 20s, early 30s, and if they're not believed then they don't often talk about it into their early 60s. So if you get told, do not talk about this, or we're not interested in listening to this, what happens is you you tend to develop psychological habits that shut you down because you've been taught and you've seen exhibited behavior that every time you've tried to express yourself, no one wants to hear. So part of my role, and often I tend to see men in two different spaces. One tends to be if they're going through the court system, and then the other one is if they've reached a crisis point. Sometimes they're feeling suicidal, for example. Someone's passed away, so maybe the offender might have passed away, and there's something that's kind of hit home. So I kind of hear from men in those two different stages. And even then, it can take many months of intense therapy to help them to develop the vocabulary, but more importantly, the space to actually finally be heard if they haven't been for, say, like I say, 20-plus years.
So how can we seek help for ourselves as men?
It's a really good question, James, and it's something that I because I also do research at AUT University as well, I'm actually really wanting to explore this. What's the difference between, you know, men coming forward and men that don't? I do a lot of I'm an ACC registered therapist, and so one of the things that I'm always interested in is why did that specific individual decide to come forward? Yet there are other individuals within similar kind of contexts that didn't. One of the things I always say is a support person is often one of the best things that you can do for your health. A support person can often be, in fact, the single biggest factor towards someone getting the right kind of help. When I did my PhD research, it was really evident the strength that support people brought in research. And I'll give you a quick example. You know, two siblings, her brother had been affected by sexual violence. No one had believed them. And unfortunately, the way that it kind of came about was that there was a perspective that it may have been a delusion. The sister had actually then stepped in and said, no, it's not. It's not a delusion. We were abused by both parents, and took her brother out of, discharged him from the acute mental health service.
Right.
This was in the research, and decided to get therapy. And he's no longer on antidepressants or anything like that. But he had like two committed years to intensive therapy and partnership. So support people are key to our men getting better.
Well, one of the problems with therapy is in terms of its cost and in terms of the number of sessions that are free.
Yes.
I think the outfit that Mike King, does, they got 24 million, and I think for the kids they get four sessions.
And then that's it.
Right. So, you know, you talking about 2 years.
Yes.
A minimum.
Yes.
I suppose. I mean, depending on, you know, how severe the trauma is and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
One of the questions I wanted to ask was, when it comes to trauma, is it always physical?
Well, there's different types of trauma.
Yeah.
Let me circle back. So with the therapy, there's potential spaces that you could get funding, and I use the word could. So you could go through ACC if you've been affected by, say, sexual harm. There are different stages involved, and I think you start off with 10 sessions. Then depending on the context, you can get a psychological review. This is part of the ACC process, and the key word is might.
Yeah.
You might be able to get additional sessions funded. T's and C's apply. What was the, just following up from that one, and then what was your question that you just hit me with, my friend?
You know, how do we look at, how do we deal with those issues?
In terms of what men bring?
Yeah, well, also in terms of, you know, the length of time you need to be in therapy.
Well, so if you looked at therapy, and granted, you know, it can be an expensive endeavour.
Yeah.
I don't pretend it's not, you know. I think that part and parcel of this is just being able to negotiate with your counsellors. Most counsellors that I know are somewhat flexible depending on people's financial circumstances, and you might get additional funding. So as another very quick example, James, Community Link, what used to be known as Work and Income New Zealand, do fund some sessions. I've had that done before,
okay,
where people's confidence has been knocked back,
yes.
With the aim of getting them back into employment. So I don't pretend that there's no magical formula for getting, you know, that's one of the reasons why I do free therapy, to help minimise those barriers, but of course that's not the case across the country.
Right.
And then in terms of supporting men to get help, so as I said before, you know, support people are a really good example. Actually, not all of us have to be therapists, but just sometimes having a listen. You know, I recently went to a bar. I don't drink, never have, but I had to pick somebody up, and it was really interesting to see how, I think they call it liquid courage, don't they?
Yeah,
it was
Dutch
often
courage,
Dutch courage. Was used as a way of these men trying to, you know, communicate, albeit using alcohol as the kind of happy medium, so to speak. So in those particular examples, what I could say for people that go to bars regularly is that it could be an example of self-medication, where the alcohol is actually used to try to, this doesn't excuse behaviour, but it just is. It's a form of self-medication where people are trying to process what's happening, albeit using alcohol as a medium. The other thing that I have to say is that I hear this in the media a lot, and I acknowledge that it is hard to come forward. Of course it is, because ultimately what are you doing? You're showing a sign of vulnerability. And for many men that I've worked with who have experienced a lot of trauma, expressing vulnerability is not something easy to do. Yes. In fact, what often happens, certainly with the Tani or men that I work with, is that they often replace it with anger, which can often be a representative of fear. You know, so rather than being seen as vulnerable, I'm going to show you the opposite so that you can hear and see me. Unfortunately, for some of those men that use violence or anger as a way, it actually does the opposite. It actually causes more isolation. So challenges, my friend.
Challenges. How many tools are there? There's mindfulness.
I guess it's as long as your sleeve. So there's mindfulness, there's talk therapy, there's group therapy, there's what are the groups that we call, James, where we have people with the lived experience? It's just gone out of my head. Can't remember what it's called, but you know, it's when someone who facilitates a group has the lived experience, like AA, for example.
Right.
You know, so that you can kind of compare or share, you know, experiences, knowing that this other person has also got shared experience as well.
Yeah.
For some of our bros, they actually prefer to try to do things themselves initially, so it might be just getting out in nature, or conversely kind of shutting the door and trying other things, like online seems to be something else that's kind of coming up. So there's a number of ways, and I always encourage men to find what it is that works for them, so long as it's not hurting another person.
Right.
Then actually, I warmly encourage you to kind of get out there and get help.
Yes. The number of people in your position,
yes,
is very limited, isn't it? I mean, there just aren't the people out there who have the expertise, the background, the experience to be doing this work.
You know, last week I had the pleasure, and I thank you, James, of interviewing Irie and Siona, who are my mentees, and they are stepping into both mental health, addictions, and looking in Māori health as well. So so that's the journey. The reality is that there aren't. I was talking to Siona just yesterday, actually. I have 7 different specialties, and we were looking for other people that might be able to fill, because at the moment I'm absolutely chock-a-block.
Swamped
is a great word. If I was a pukeko, my friend, I'm definitely swamped. But that's the reality, is that, you know, at the moment I've got 55 people on my caseload. And as you know, outside of my hours at AUT, I also travel across the country, but I've reached maximum capacity. So the conversation was, you know, who else do we know in these circles? Just last week, I had a phone call asking if I knew any men who might be either counsellors, social workers, or even occupational therapists to take on a violence prevention role for a service here in Hamilton. So there are far fewer and in between who are specialised and actually, with respect, know what they're doing and be able to do it in a way that enhances both kaupapa Pākehā, that's to say our Western approaches, as well as kaupapa Māori, or our Indigenous ways of doing things.
Right. They have group therapy sessions in Waikiria prison, for example. I don't know if that's across the board, but they certainly do it at Waikiria.
Yeah, group therapy sessions work so long as you've got a good facilitator that knows what they're doing and is able to pivot with change. Now, people have often asked me about those Man Up, the Destiny's Church run. Actually, I have no issue with them because if they work, then why not?
Yeah.
I just so happen to know a couple of facilitators that run them, and I think that they're excellent facilitators, and I've seen changes in some of those men. And I say that because as part of my therapy, I tend to see people once every fortnight or minimum once a month. So then it's, what do you do with the other time that you have?
Yeah.
So they themselves have tried Man Up here at Kerikeriroa Hamilton and have actually had quite good success in terms of processing stuff. So when you do group sessions, of course, you're processing it with a group. With me, you're doing it one-to-one. So in a way, you're kind of addressing
both sides of the equation.
Yeah, which I think is actually quite effective for our men. Mm. Like I said, sometimes men need space to go into their own way, their own time and space. Then they might just want to do it with an individual to kind of bounce ideas and then express those ideas as a collective.
Is there any specific desire in terms of the gender of a counsellor? I mean, do men prefer men versus women, or does it not matter?
I guess individual, like a thumbprint. For example, with my role in ACC, they do ask if you want to see a male or female counsellor. More often than not, men don't tend to care. That seems to be my experience initially.
Right.
Until they get to that sexual violence stuff, and then experience has shown them that they tend to want to talk to a guy.
Right. So is there any reason for that, do you think?
Yeah, I'm still trying to kind of get my head around it. Like I said, I've worked with thousands of men, but it tends to be kind of different. Part of it is about wanting to kind of, well, the way that I describe it in terms of wider or from a spiritual perspective, is they want to kind of like have a like-for-like energy-wise with a person, and sometimes it's easier to talk to a guy. I'll give you an example. Albeit a kind of roundabout way. So my GP is male. I'd actually prefer to go to a male doctor rather than a female doctor, obviously, because I want to, for me personally, because I have specific needs, you know, now and then it just feels much more comfortable, right?
Right.
I'm sure this must be the case for our Wakiri counterparts. Having talked to men, like I said, for 20 plus years, most guys initially say, well, actually, I didn't care what kind of counsel I needed, but having reflected on it, I'm actually glad that I ended up going to a guy, because there are just certain things that we don't need to necessarily talk about, or that there's a mutual kind of understanding. And for our Māori and Pacific, there's an extra added layer in terms of ethnicity as well.
Yes.
So Māori and Pacific therapists or clinicians are not that easy to come by. And so what they're then looking for is kind of the next layer. So they're looking for a therapist. Hopefully they'll find one, irrespective of gender. Then it's looking at, do you understand me on a cultural level? And sometimes even sexual orientation level as well. That also comes up with some guys that I also work with as well. So multiple layers, my friend.
Yes, indeed. The tools you have, like therapy, group therapy, one-to-one therapy, mindfulness, medication perhaps in some cases. What role does physical activity and nutrition have?
Huge. Absolutely huge. In some ways, physical activity can be more powerful than some medications.
Right.
Now, I'm not advocating that you put down your medications and start running out there. I mean, as someone who has heart failure, that wouldn't work for me. But we know, for example, that getting out there and going for a walk or a brisk walk can actually be incredibly impactful in terms of how our moods fluctuate. So for my patients, for example, clients who have, depression as an example, right? First thing in the morning, James, you know, as the sun's rising, you can start to kind of connect with your environment. Or it might be last thing at night, depending, because sometimes people don't want to be around other people, right?
Yeah.
So you want to kind of time it in. Nutrition also plays a huge part as well.
Yeah.
One of the things that my mentee, Sione, and this is why, James, I deliberately got him to do this, is the Heart Foundation of New Zealand runs an online course. We're not being paid by the Heart Foundation, but just say they offer a free They did offer a free course. I think there's now a nominal amount of about $100, $150 or something like that to do a 12-week nutrition course, which has been incredibly impactful to help Sione to think about when working with his clients, what is the role that food plays. So, for example, if everyone's always eating junk food, of course that's going to impact on the nutrition that you're getting. Fruits and vegetables are insanely expensive, so how do we find a way of trying to get something that's nutritious and good? You know, people in Indigenous circles often talk about as food being medicine.
Yeah.
Right? So what kind of food are you eating that you can afford? So to answer those two questions, or in summary, physical activity is absolutely crucial to your well-being.
Yeah.
So take me for a joke. We'll use me as the example, eh, mate? So as you know, I tend to work about 16 hours a day, 16, 17 hours a day. So by the time I get back to... He's shaking his head for those that are listening. By the time I get back to Auckland, it might be 10 or 11 o'clock at night. But even then, I'll chuck on my shorts and, you know, walking shoes and out. I go for 40 minutes max. I like to try to get out, even if it is for, say, 40 minutes to an hour, James, that's what I aim for. And I tend to kind of hit the beach or somewhere where it's not going to be too loud. And all I do is just walk and de-pack.
Yeah.
Get home at about 1, go to sleep, and then repeat the cycle again the next day.
Right, yeah. So we've got exercise, physical exercise. We've got nutrition.
Yep. Yep.
We've got medication, mindfulness, group and individual therapy.
Yep.
Combine all of those together and you've actually got a fighting chance.
You do. And let's talk a little bit about medication, because as you know, I'm not anti-meds. Medication plays an important part to people's well-being. However, I don't think that it should be the be-all and end-all. It really should be used in combination with other things. Now, some meds, what we used to call like Gen 1 meds, the earlier meds, do have side effects.
Yes.
Now, not all meds, right? But things like constipation, things like weight gain, sleepiness or excessive sleeping, that
drooling.
Type, drooling.
Shaking.
Depending on the meds, right? So I'm not saying that one med has all those, but different medications have different impacts. And so it's really important that you actually work with your doctor as much as you can and actually let them know. So, for example, I'm a diabetic, and when I initially tried metformin, it did not work for me at all. The side effects weren't pleasant for myself, and I had to advocate in order to get different, like Gen 2, which is like the next lot of meds, before the ones that I actually found that worked at the time. So... Yeah. You know, even for someone like myself, who is, I wouldn't say I'm the fittest person in the world, but I do my best to kind of get out there and get my work done. You know, I have my own personal challenges.
Yeah.
And medication helps, but I don't solely rely on it as helping me for every other, you know, issue that I have, because actually I've still got to eat moderately. For example, if we look at food as health or food as medicine, I've still got to eat moderately. I've still got to be mindful of my own stress levels, which impacts our men.
Yes.
You know, things like cortisone levels inside the mind, you know, and our brain. So our brains react to stress and trauma depending on the environment, right? Because we're geared towards fight, flight, and, of course, survival.
Mm.
But our landscape has changed. Long gone are saber-toothed cats and woolly mammoths, my friend. And so yet our brains are still geared towards this kind of survival mode. And
I think living in a city too, because, you know, parts of the cities we live in are a little bit like the jungle. And
they're stressful.
They're stressful. And
just a different kind.
Provoking, aren't they? Yeah.
Just a different kind of stress that we haven't actually adjusted to.
Mm.
And so then what happens is that your brain doesn't recognize this and still pumps out, you know, high cortisone levels. And over time, that can actually cause a lot of harm. So coming back to your initial point, you know, all these different types of wellness approaches, therapy and medication can assist, but I'm a really big opponent of in combination rather than solely, you know, by themselves.
Mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
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 Well, I think I remember reading somewhere a few years ago now, probably about 10 years ago, that there were 2.5 million scripts for antidepressants in New Zealand.
Yep. That doesn't surprise me. And that's what I mean, but they shouldn't be the be-all and end-all.
Yeah.
You know, having worked with a number of clients, is one of the questions that I ask. What are you doing? What else are you doing? You know, and some, not all, some guys that I work with just think that the medication itself is going to be the thing that does the trick.
Yeah.
Yet, if we look at trauma, actually one of the things, and this really came up strongly in my doctoral research as well as other research that I've done over the years, is that if we don't deal with the underlying trauma, medication is only a substitute for other stuff, right? Yeah. It doesn't fix everything.
Right.
And so what I often say is, which is why my standing tall logo is a tree, is that we've actually got to dig and actually understand what are these things that are impacting the roots to support the trunk. Otherwise, in effect, you know, the meds are doing some of the work.
Yeah.
But there's other things that they can't do.
So we've got mindfulness.
Yep.
Physical activity,
yep.
Nutrition,
meditation,
peer support, one-to-one yep. counselling, group therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Where does something like sleep come into it?
Sleep is absolutely vital, not only to our mental health, but just to our bodies recovering. Now, there's different research out there that kind of shows what's the optimum amount of sleep. Now, Margaret Thatcher, back in the 80s, James.
Yes, I remember them fondly.
Yeah. For those who remember, Margaret Thatcher reported that she slept something like 4 hours of sleep, you know, a night. Yes. I personally couldn't operate under that. So between 8 to 10 hours is actually the way to go. And one of the things is, as human beings, we're actually not geared towards long-term sleep. So, you know, it's only been less than 100 years that this idea that we go to bed and sleep overnight. Before then, what would happen is we'd get up around midnight, do some work, you know, or potter around, and then wait for the next cycle of sleep to kick in.
Right.
So actually we might be awake for an hour or two at night, say midnight, 1 in the morning, then go back to sleep. There's this kind of fallacy that that's what we've always done, is slept overnight, but we haven't. Our sleep has changed depending on the context.
Well, we probably went to bed earlier too, because you didn't have the electric lights
exactly.
and television and radio exactly. and all those sorts of things.
One of the things that I do say to my clients is to turn your phone off.
Yeah.
And also the light on your phone and your laptop can also impact when your brain wants to properly rest.
Yeah,
we know that phone addictions are huge. Yeah. I was driving here, right, from Auckland, and as I was driving, I was counting how many people were on their phones.
Oh, no.
Well, keeping my eyes on the road, but casually looking over.
Yeah.
I counted about 20.
Really?
Yeah, but there's just this constant need of wanting to connect, wanting to be. And
what is it about? I mean, is there a pathology there?
I think it's just this idea of instant gratification.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. When I started many years ago, James, it tended to be your classic alcohol, cigarettes, marijuana, methamphetamine. That was the kind of stuff that I was working with. Now what I'm working with, in addition to sexual violence, is things like gaming addiction and other technological things that just didn't exist at the time. But when it comes back to sleep, it is vital, and it actually takes it's like a habit process. It does take a while for the body to actually adjust to what you're wanting to do.
Right.
So I function between, you know, 6 hours is a good night for me.
Yes.
And ideally, if I take a week off, you know, work, which happens every now and then, I try to get in at least, you know, 8 hours, I suppose.
Right.
But I am known to nap kind of in the afternoon, like a 45-minute nap, which actually does me.
Does
me? Yeah, it does the world of good. You know, whether it might be kind of between 4 and 5 is when I tend to kind of hit a lull.
Yes.
So I just think actually just have a brief rest.
Have a brief rest, yeah.
And then kind of pick up the afternoon and take a run for it. The other thing that you might want to also do is you might want to kind of reduce your coffee about one or two for all those coffee lovers out there, because caffeine takes a long time to process in the system.
Yeah.
So it can also be one of the things that might be keeping you up at night.
Yes, indeed.
It's the same thing.
Well, it occurred to me that people either spend all night gaming or watching TV or doing binge watching something, Or they are asleep all day.
Yes.
And all night, and then there are those who can't sleep. So, yes, as you say, sleep is...
Watch the space. I think we'll hear more and more and more about gaming addiction.
Yeah, me too. Me too. All right, let's take a quick music break. What have we got?
We've got Lady Six with Diamonds.
Feeling like I just got paid. I earned $100 worth of gas vouchers today, working as a government slave. When money gets a little bit tight, we hold on to what we know and never lose sight of the little things. It's the little things that make it all worthwhile. They say they do it for the love, not the money, but the living in the sunlight. Rich now, working, got a daddy, turned the blind eye. Oh, just to be so young and love, right? And here I stay in the gutter, turning butter into diamonds. Diamonds, diamonds, you're turning butter into diamonds. Diamonds, diamonds. Sunny days gonna turn to gray. How long will it last? It seems forever. Bring me down dirty weather. Got a stack of bills remaining unpaid. Call on the credit team to fix it. This week I had to miss it. Nothing but lack of work to blame. The shame. Nothing but lack of work to blame. The shame. They say they do it for the love, not the money, but the living in the sunlight. Rich now, working, got a daddy, turned a blind eye. Oh, just to be so young and love right. And here I stay in the gutter, turning butter into diamonds. For the love, not the money, but the living in the sunlight. Rich now, working, got a daddy, turned a blind eye. Oh, just to be so young and love right. And here I stay in the gutter, turning butter into diamonds, diamonds, diamonds. You're turning butter into diamonds, 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 diamonds. Turning butter.
Good morning. This is James King. You're listening to Backchat with James King. Today my guest is Dr. Alexander Stevens II. We're talking about men's health and well-being, how we approach trauma in a historic sense, in a historical sense rather. We look at what some of the misconceptions are.
Mm-hmm.
What are they?
That men should harden up. That still continues even now, James. So to put things into perspective, when I'm outside my academic role, I travel all the way up to the Hokianga, down to Thames, Tauranga, down to Taupo over to the other side of New Plymouth. So I tend to cover half the country up.
Yeah.
And like I said, I see over 50 people a month with various needs. But the ones that always come up is this perspective that men should harden up, that, you know, if it's happened in the past, they should build a bridge and get over it, take a concrete pill and harden up. I've heard it all. And yet it that advice just isn't going to work. You know, as a therapist, I'm not interested in bringing up re-traumatizing. Actually, it's about how do we re-navigate those spaces in your head to help you get you ahead so you're not stuck. So that's the first one, James, this idea of harden up. The second one, and we touched on it before, is that this idea that men don't ask for help. They do, yes, but they don't ask in a way that says, I need help. Actually, men, and again, don't want to generalize or stereotype too much, but actually men will often demonstrate it in their behavior that they might be withdrawn, they might be absent. That's typically the kind of stuff that my guys have worked with traditionally before, James.
Yes.
They're starting to withdraw from their friends, they're starting to withdraw from their families. And if you see men doing this over long times, they might be excessively sleeping, they might be in their man cave, or they might be in their shed. Now, short periods of time, that makes sense because there's a sense of reflection, there's a sense of wanting to kind of go into your space and figure out what's wrong. Prolong, so I'd say longer than a week, then you really should be, you know, seeking external kind of support.
Yeah.
As a quick example, 2 weeks ago, I had a contact from a person whose husband was had been triggered from the media stuff around the state care of abuse inquiry, and hadn't told his wife what had happened. But he had actually withdrawn, and she knew that something was up. So, you know, don't expect men to come up to you with big blazing signs saying, we need help, but actually look at the circumstances and the environment and ask yourself, you know, is this the kind of normal pattern or behavior? And if it's not, then maybe they might actually benefit from talking to somebody else whose aim is to get them ahead, not to re-trigger, not to re-traumatize, but to make sense of what's happened historically with an intention of finding a way forward.
What would you say to someone who's asking the question, you know, what is PTS?
D, and
what about flashbacks and things like that? Are they part of the equation?
So when we talk about post-traumatic stress disorder, with the guys that I work with, well, there's a couple of examples I can think about. One is I have worked with men that have been in the army who have been affected. You know, so things like a car backfiring,
right,
or a specific noise which might sound like gunfire can trigger people to drop to the ground,
right,
or freeze in spaces. So to be clear, post-traumatic stress disorder does exist.
Yes.
Right? That's not a myth. That is absolutely real.
Well, in the old days, they called it shell shock, didn't they?
Well, samey.
Yeah.
And for our men that have been abused, it can be the same. Certain smells, certain triggers.
Mm.
Can also do the same thing. So as a therapist, my role is about how do we acknowledge that this is all flashbacks, right? This might happen, but how do we put it into perspective, or how do we find a way to quickly get you back into control?
Yes.
As an example, sometimes our thoughts can go a little bit wayward, right? So, and sometimes I have men who might talk and say that they're useless, they're nothing. You know, they're hopeless.
Yes.
This is me being G-rated. They say much worse things.
Right.
And so sometimes, sometimes I might get them to repeat their voice, but I might get them to do it to the Happy Birthday song or to Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. And the whole point is that as they're saying it, I say, how does it, you know, what are you noticing as you're singing, you know, I'm useless, but to the tune of Happy Birthday or Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, and they said, well, it sounds stupid.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, and I'm like, yes, but and all you've done is same context, but you've shifted the way that it thinks because of, you know, because you're having to sing it. So you take the power away from those particular words, and it's like sleep, James, or looking after yourself. It actually does take time to kind of solidify new patterns and behaviour. I think the other one is that when men do talk, that we really should listen. I think about our suicide rates, they're not the greatest in this country.
Mm.
And I know that it can be hard to know what do we do.
Yes.
right? It's absolutely hard. And for our men, it can be really hard coming forward, like I said, just because they're men, let alone having been abused or experienced some kind of trauma. And yet we know that often suicide can be, it's a final point when no one else is kind of taking them seriously. And over the last couple of years, I have noticed more people coming forward as a reaction of that person taking their life. And certainly in my life, I've known a few people in my own personal circles who I wasn't aware had things going on. So, you know, I'm not expecting for people that are listening who aren't in some kind of therapeutic background that you suddenly take on the persona of super counsellor or pretend to be one. But actually, there is a power of human connection and being with that person and saying things like, what do you want me to do with this information?
Yeah.
You know, do you need me to come with you? You know, what can I do to help? And actually, sometimes it might just be the fact that you're there at the right time. One of the things I've always appreciated, James, is that you have asked me to talk about Standing Tall, which I talk about 0800 numbers all in the one spot because, again, you know, people don't know necessarily what's available. So Lifeline, which is where I used to work, for example, I think can be incredibly effective across the board, irrespective of gender. And for those men that are listening who have been impacted by some kind of trauma, at some point you've got a choice, which is what I often say as a therapist. You can either continue on this path that you're on, knowing that it's probably not, you know, nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that expression, James, that the definition is of insanity is to repeat the same process, hoping for a different result. Yeah. Or you take a chance and you say, yes, you know, my life's not going the greatest. Yes, there are lots of things that are happening, but if I could find just one person that I might be able to connect with, maybe things can change.
Where do you stand on the spiritual side of things for Wairua and that sort of thing?
Yeah, so Wairua is a beautiful word. So if we just kind of broke that word down, you know, so Wai is the Māori word for water, Rua is the Māori word for two. Mm. So the two different spaces, that is to say the spaces between the living and the dead, and in those realms where Wairua kind of crosses over, right, two different rivers. In Wairua, I'm a huge believer of Wairua. I believe that there are times and spaces where I've thought about particular individuals who have then suddenly popped up, like yesterday on my messenger saying, long time no hear. Sometimes I get what I call a poku feeling. It might be something's up.
Yeah.
And I absolutely trust it. Wairua can also be something like connecting with another person, and it might be the first time that you've met them, and for whatever reason, you just find yourself connecting on lots of levels, and it's left a kind of memorable impact. So one of the things that I'm doing with Irie, for example, is actually training him on how do you trust your Wairua? What does that look like in terms of physical applications? I mean, obviously there's this other side as well. And things like the environment, James, can be incredibly helpful to benefit the Wairua. My dear mate Richie Wah, for example, who lives in Timaru, get this, negative 1 degrees in Timaru, he's up in the morning going into the sea for half an hour. That's how he... That's real commitment to your health, right?
Yeah.
But that's what he does almost every day in the morning to connect with his Wairua, you know. Karakia, he's known locally for doing it, and then he goes straight in there. We had the blessing of also talking to Hamiora. This was some time back, who was doing hip-hop and dance, and that was his form of self-care. You'll find him in Rahui Pōkeka, you know, in Huntly, first thing in the morning, overlooking the Tainui River, doing karakia and connecting with the day. So karakia or prayer, and I'm not talking necessarily about a Christian prayer, but a connection to divinity from their perspective is a really powerful way of bringing yourself into the moment. So I myself, James, am not a morning person. You'll be shocked to know I'm much more a night person.
Me too.
But I have to get up at 6 in the morning, and so I force myself. I mean, the first thing that I do in the morning is I do meditation.
Yes.
Now, don't laugh at me, but I might play a bit of Enya on the way to kind of get me into
oh
this.
Oh, my Lord.
I know. But I do love it, you know, just to kind of bring me into the morning.
Yeah.
I don't, nor would I ever jump in the ocean at -1 degrees, but I will have a cold shower and I will close my eyes and just do a bit of mindfulness to kind of bring me into the day. Yeah. And I do my own forms of karakia.
Yes.
My own forms of prayer, utilizing our old atua, yes, our old gods. And so rongo, for example, is the atua of peace, right? So I won't say it in Māori, but in English, but I'll say something along the lines of, I acknowledge rongo as the atua of peace to help bring peace into my life as I start the day ahead.
Yes.
Right? My closing karakia that I often say is, thank you for those people that I have met. I let go of all the hurt that they have given me. I flow it on to Wairua to be able to process.
Right.
I look forward to the day ahead.
Yes.
I have to.
Yeah.
Because every single day brings its own challenges. My mentor, former mentor, Dr. Helen Warren, she talks about gratitude.
Right.
Gratitude is incredibly powerful. James, it can be another form of Wairua. What are the things that you appreciate? Quick example. I appreciate that my car starts every morning.
Yes.
I appreciate that I'm taking my car on Monday to the mechanic to get it serviced because it's already done its 50,000 kilometres it needs to get. You know, I appreciate that I've got money in my bank account to be able to pay my mechanic. So yes. You know, and sometimes it could even be an appreciation of, I appreciate the fact that I've just opened my eyes and am alive.
Alive, yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of hurt, especially with the stuff that I do, James, there's a lot of hurt and there's a lot of anger and there's a beautiful Māori was like angi angi or mamai, which is like grief or feeling, unsettled,
yeah.
Right? But that's what I do for my job,
yeah.
And yet I have to flow it somewhere,
yes.
And so, you know, as a male that's also working with other men, I have to actually apply the stuff that I'm wanting to do,
right?
Otherwise, it would be hypocritical. And, you know, men do look at me and like, well, I hear what you're saying, but are you doing what you're saying?
Yeah.
And that's kind of crucial.
Do you walk the talk?
Yeah, absolutely. And the answer is, for the most part, yes.
Mm. Let's take another music break. What have we got?
Disc 2, my friend. Disc 2. Now, there's a really beautiful song called Birds. Track 3, Lewis Baker. It's a nice reflective one that I would probably listen to if I was going to get back into that Wairua mode at night, my friend. So track three.
Keep talking while I set it up.
Oh, very good. Well, if you or somebody else, you know, that's been affected by hurt or sexual violence, hop onto standingtallnz.org. That's standingtallnz.org. Available 24/7. There to help you.
Time stood still. And you there, I caught your eye for a second, then you disappeared. You must have flown away with the other beautiful birds to another place, and I would like to fly there too. Can you show me the way? On a sunny day, oh, you were the crystal that's by my window that reflected many rays. But the body bends before the shadow, so I put on my armor, buckle it tighter than ever before. Fear I may lose it all, put this on to soften the fall. Show me the way. Show me the way to your heart.
heart is lost. May not be forgotten. What's been found before can be found again. Oh, after the rain, I will fall down at your door. Oh, when a heart can be mended, and what's gold can be given, so show me the way. Show me the way to your heart.
Was Lewis Baker with
Birds. Great song, eh?
With
Birds.
Birds, yeah, great song. Excellent song. Because we've been talking about the things you can do, we've come up with a great big list of things that you can do to, you know, as part of your wellness.
Yes.
Wellness plan, if you like. Tell me about standingtall.com.
Yeah. StandingTallNZ.org. So StandingTallNZ.org was part of my doctoral studies, which reviewed online websites to actually see, are we looking at supporting Māori and Pacific men, their support people, and community organisations that's received a disclosure but don't know what to do with it? The short answer, James, was there weren't any websites.
Right.
So that was... I don't know how to say this. It was this perfect, unfortunate position of actually writing a PhD around what would that look like to design something, working with people in the community and building something that was relevant. So that's been going now for 5 years. It's a voluntary service, so I have other people that work in partnership with me. And we do two things. One, where possible, we try to provide free therapy. And depending on your region, if we're not able to, we either divert you to ACC or we try to find you somewhere local. The key word is try.
Yeah, so you're not just saying nah.
Well, that's right. One of the things that we spoke about with my dear colleague Martima from like two podcasts ago when we were doing it was that every door should be an open door. Currently, they're not. The other thing that we're doing at the moment, James, is trying to work more with our disability or impairment whānau. So it's about 1 in 4 experience some kind of disability or impairment that might be hearing or visual. So Standing Tall is currently going through a revitalization process, i.e. me, trying to ensure that it's up to date and complying with standards so that whether you have no impairments or you have impairments, hopefully you'll find a way of being able to access our information.
So you can find what on the website? You can find numbers?
You can find support numbers from across the country. You've got things like MSD's community directory where you can go into a link, type in what you need and hopefully it'll come up.
Yep.
You've got questions that haven't been asked before but are the most common questions based on the research that I've been doing, things like why me?
Yes.
How do I support a person that's been affected by abuse? Do I go to the police? How long will it take for him to heal? Well, these were the questions that kept coming up in the community. And
so you have those questions and you answer them too?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Plus, there's also things like these podcasts. Actually, we should do a plug to you, James, you know, because men also want to hear other topics like anxiety, suicidal thoughts, addictions, financial capability, mentorship. And then we also have links to things like TEDx, for example, you know, things that we know are going to benefit wellness.
Yes. I haven't been on the website terribly recently, but whenever I've gone on there, I've got something out of it. And it's no average thing, the fact that you've got the podcasts on the website, because they are worth listening to. Pat yourself on the back.
Thank you.
Alexander.
Ditto.
Now, look, we've got a few minutes, and as we wrap up this chapter of Back Chat, let's take a moment to reflect on the voices we've amplified. Any standouts for you?
It's a bit of an unfair question, I guess. You know, I've got a soft spot for my mentees, and I just think, you know, Caleb Sione and Irie have just been on sparkling form, going from people that were quite in their shell to slowly starting to unfurl. I think about those conversations around hip-hop.
You know,
with Humming Order and Charles as an example, suicide prevention with Danielle struck a chord with people.
I've got to say, and I hope Sione doesn't mind me saying it, but him today, or sorry, at least a few days ago, compared to what he was like on the first time he came into the studio, night and day.
That's right.
Night and day.
Same deal with Ira. You remember he talked about having anxiety and depression, and now, you know, he's on sparkling form. People like Martima, for example, you know, the work that we do. I mean, I just we talked about appreciation.
Pre-Birdsong,
and I just think actually if I took a moment, I do express gratitude to people like Starsome and Chris who wanted to talk about, you know, how parenting, you know, as dads, or Core YO in terms of the amazing work that they do, or financial capability. We've really run the gamut. I mean, my favourite one wasn't the one that we've done. It was the one featuring Dr. Ali Henry and what's his name? Previous Reserve Bank Governor
Don Brash.
You know, that episode to me was fascinating. You know, hearing these two kind of polar opposites. So I think you've done brilliantly, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
So in my car, I didn't bring it with me, there's a standing tall jumper with your name on it.
Lovely.
Favourite colour is my way of saying and expressing gratitude. But those are probably the ones that have stuck out. And of course, our own relationship, James, in terms of, you know, working together in that spaces of mental health and advocating for people. What was that, 10 plus years ago?
Must be 10 plus years, maybe even 12 or 13,
And of course, walking this journey all the way till now. So thank you for having me as your monthly guest. It's been a divine privilege.
I'd have you on every week if it was possible. But you know, you mean a lot to me. You know, and not just for these shows, but as a friend and a mentor and a confidant as well. So I've got to say, I appreciate you. And there have been a few interesting shows, I'd have to say. Not everyone's been a classic. But there have been some interesting programs. It's a shame to some degree that we're winding up the show, because there is just so much to talk about. And there is just so much going on at the moment in the country that's... depending on where you stand, either negative or positive, but it's polar opposite type stuff. And, you know, I can well see a split in the country developing. And so, you know, in a way, it's sad that we're closing down this show because we would give voice to those things.
For now, and as you've indicated, James, maybe there might be something for me to do at some point.
Absolutely.
In the future.
Absolutely. Very good.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.